What the hell is going on in the WNBA? That's the only way I can think of an intro to this podcast, to this show. On this episode of Business Decision, I'm Mike Vorkunov, a reporter for The Athletic. We're going to talk about the craziest day in WNBA history. I don't know if that's accurate, if September 30th, 2025 is the craziest day in WNBA history, but I just labeled it. And on the show today with me is Ben Pickman, my coworker at The Athletic. Here we are offline on Athletic Business. Ben, I guess I can do the TLDR on what happened today in the WNBA, but where do I start, I guess, is my question.
I think you should start by Nafisa Collier in a boot stepping to the podium or scooting to the podium and then beginning to read a statement. And I think that is where you should take it from here, Mike.
All right. So let's imagine this. Nafisa Collier, great WNBA player, sitting in front of a microphone at a podium in Minnesota, reading a prepared statement, wearing a boot, as Ben said, apologizing that she was winded because she walked over to that platform in a boot. And then what I would maybe generously call eviscerating WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert. I think the best way to explain it is just to cherry pick one quote from Nafisa Collier, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure I'm getting it right, in which she said the WNBA has the worst leadership in sports. Is that, I have that quote?
No, she actually said the worst leadership in the world.
Oh, in the world.
Yeah.
Which is, considering a lot of stuff going on in the world right now, that is a very superlative statement to make. And she went on to recount many conversations that she's had with Kathy Engelbert, some of which came during Unrivaled, I believe. She pulled Caitlin Clark into this by not only mentioning her, by not only saying that she's making $16 million in endorsements, but also saying that Kathy Engelbert said, well, she should be grateful for the WNBA as a platform. What jumped out to you? What quote should I mention here at the top that everyone probably has already read or is about to go read as they listen to this? But what am I missing?
Yeah, there were a few others that really caught my ear. The full quote regarding leadership was that we have the best players in the world, that we have the best fans in the world, but right now we, the WNBA, have the world's the worst leadership in the world. There was a quote about leadership again and how WNBA leadership, their ability to be held accountable is to suppress everyone's voices by handing out fines. That is what Fee said. And she admitted, you know, I'm not concerned about a fine. I'm concerned about the future of our sport. A few others that stuck out to me. She said, for too long, quote, I have tried to have these conversations in private. And I think we can get into the private conversations we have had that, you know, echo a lot of what she has said. But it's clear there's no intention of accepting there's a problem. That is a huge statement. The league has made clear it isn't about innovation. It isn't about collaboration. It's about control and power. And if I can throw one more out there, she said, the real threat to our league isn't money. It isn't ratings or even missed calls or even physical play. It's a lack of accountability from the league office. I mean, Nafisa Collier touched on leadership. She touched on Kathy Engelbert. She touched on officiating. She touched on the CBA. All of them, you know, were part of her, you know, this statement that I think, as you said at the top, I don't know if it's the most important day in WNBA history, but it's certainly going to be up there. Like, it's certainly an unforgettable day. I mean, it's one of, it is a seminal day right now, considering all that is going on, especially.
Yeah, I there have been, in the history of professional sports, a lot of important and maybe unprecedented days in the labor rights movement when it comes to players, across the multiple leagues. There's the story of the NBA players threatening to boycott an NBA All-Star game, right? There's Kirk Flood taking Major League Baseball to court to create free agency. This was not a day where there was an action that drove something directly, but I do not remember a professional athlete of any sport coming out. I don't even think it's fair to say criticizing their commissioner, but like, this felt personal in many ways. And this was backed up throughout the day by the comments of other players across the league. I don't think I saw one player say, no, you know what? Fisa Collier was like, she's on the mark, but like, you know, maybe it was a tad strong. It was like, I agree with her like 80% of the way. Everyone was wholeheartedly behind her. And I don't think I heard anyone backtrack from what she was saying. You know, like Lexi Hall was behind her. Elena Deldon was behind her. Sophie Cunningham, I think, went even further, as she tends to do in her own Instagram posts, right? Like, everyone was behind her. And we're at this kind of very critical stage in WNBA history where they are seeing success like they've never seen before. They are seeing tension like they've never seen before. They are now facing a CBA negotiation like they've never had before. And we now have one of the VPs of the union coming out, taking a flamethrower to the commissioner. And we're like, I think now about a month away from the CBA lapsing. And, you know, we're about, you know, a few days away from the WNBA finals. Like, this is a crazy thing to happen in a crazy time in the league.
Yeah, I mean, a few things off that. I mean, I think, number one, we should say that the WNBA business has changed a lot over the, I guess it's 6 years that Kathy Engelbert has been the commissioner. And it has largely, if not unanimously across the board, changed for the better, right? Consider that next year, there's a 11-year, $2.2 billion TV rights, media rights deal that is coming into effect. That expansion fees right now were $250 million, a record for the three teams that entered the league or that will be entering the league in 2028, 29, and 30. That's up from $50 million in 2023. That, you know, in 2020, right when Kathy Engelbert took over, and we've done some reporting on this, you know, previously, Mike, like there was an existential crisis. That was the word that Kathy Engelbert used in the league. It was an existential moment. The big question was, maybe if they didn't have the bubble season, would the WNBA even continue or would it have ceased to exist? Like that was a seemingly legitimate question. And so we have come a long way from that under, you know, with Commissioner Kathy Engelbert, you know, helping to run the league or at the, you know, at, as the figurehead of the league. I think my language there is intentional, if you might notice, because of some other dynamics we can talk about too.
Yeah.
And yet what was so striking was just that Fee really did come out and say in public so many things that people have said in private. And that I think one of the things that was so fascinating or is so fascinating to think about in terms of what is next from here was Fee talked about issues of transparency, accountability, honesty. Like those were all kind of underlying, either implicit or explicit, you know, themes in her comments. How does Kathy Engelbert recover from any of those? Does that matter? I don't really know, but it just seems like, you know, the resentment between player and management was so strong. And from the people that I talked to today who, you know, are senior people at team levels, you know, different roles at teams, like this isn't just like players against Kathy. Like I think a lot more people are on the player side than maybe people at the league even want to admit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can start there. Look, it's clear that the players versus league resentment is there, right? And maybe that's not surprising, especially during these long CBA negotiations where frustrations and resentment can, you know, come together and boil over after a period of time. You know, I've been reporting on the W for a few years. Ben, you've been doing it longer than I have. You are much more well-sourced than I have, than I am. But the one thing that's always been clear as I've done reporting on the W is that everyone's frustrated with the WNBA. There is no party that I've talked to that is happy with the WNBA. You know, I think the frustrations come out from everywhere. The arrows are slung from everywhere at the WNBA league office and at Kathy Engelbert. Everyone's trying to think of what the ramifications of what this is, right? And the things that we discussed earlier today, and I think are still true, is how can Kathy Engelbert go forward? Because it's not just one player who has come out so strongly against her, right? And the reason this is maybe one of the most important days in WNBA history is not just because the star player came out and burned her, right? And opened up the burn book. It's because she speaks for every player in the league, it seems like. And so how can Kathy Engelbert go forward? How can you continue to have a CBA negotiation continue on in good faith? And to me, the other question is, how and where is she going to get support to remain in that job, right? Like, that's always been a critical thing. You've got to have a constituency. Who is the constituency that's going to support her? We've seen some of the owners already, you know, does the Connecticut Sun have her back? You know, like, you know, like, right. I'm trying to struggle to think of the Las Vegas Aces,
do the New York Liberty teams that,
Right. You know, there's a long list of teams that have had their own beefs with the front office, with the WNBA front office. So I guess, like, let's think of it this way. What does this mean for the CBA negotiations? Like, are we just staring down the barrel of a lockout, which is part one? And then are we staring at the barrel of a season delayed next May, which is the much more critical date here?
Yeah, I mean, I think to the question of next May, I think that is still a genuine I don't know. And I actually don't know how much what was said on Tuesday will really impact whether games begin next May or not, if that makes sense, because I do think players do want to play games. Like, I think they have been clear about that. And I think there is a lot that could happen from a potential WNBA office leadership standpoint between now and May that could impact the tenor of those talks. And deadlines, as we know, spur action. Back in 2003, that was the closest the league, the WNBA, ever came to having a work stoppage. David Stern was the commissioner of the NBA at that time, and the NBA, you know, like it does today, still very much has its hands on the WNBA. David Stern put a deadline, I think it was April 18, 2003, and they agreed like that day or the day before, and they started the season a month later. So, you know, if you said, you know, in March that there became a deadline in April for a season to begin in May, and suddenly games were agreed upon, or, you know, a deal was agreed upon in that April, I wouldn't be shocked. What it means in the short term, I mean, Kelsey Plum, another WNBPA vice president and a Los Angeles Sparks star, she told our own Sabrina Merchant at The Athletic today, actually, on Tuesday, that it still feels like they're basically as far away as they ever have been. I mean, Plum said, quote, "We're just not where we want to be." She described the tenor of the meetings right now as combative. I don't think that's going to change at all after Fee's comments
today, no,
in the slightest. Like, and I don't really know how they, from the league office standpoint, try and regain the trust at all, right? And I don't know who in the WNBA constituency also, you know, I'm sure league lawyers are supporting Kathy Engelbert because that is their job, but even in the ownership ranks, like, you know, I don't think I haven't sampled owners around the league in depth about this, though I would like to. If they are listening and want to pick up the phone and or text me, I would
call Ben.
Respond to those. Yeah,
if you're but a WNBA like, owner and listen to this podcast, call Ben.
Exactly. But like, you know, are WNBA owners rushing to Kathy Engelbert's, you know, her back, publicly or privately? Like, I don't really know the answer to the question. And I think the bigger question that we should also talk about too, Mike, is are NBA owners, you know, rushing to defend Kathy Engelbert here? Are they getting in the ear of Adam Silver, who is Kathy Engelbert's boss, and saying, what is going on in the WNBA? Because, you know...
let me cut you off for a second there. I think you get to the crux of it, is how does this go forward? Is what does the NBA do here, right? A lot of the NBA owners who own WNBA teams or have acquired... you know, WNBA expansion teams in the last few years, their relationship is with Adam Silver. Their relationship is with the NBA. And I don't want to call it the dirty little secret of the WNBA, but like, I think a lot of people just realize this is, you know, the NBA has a heavy hand in how the WNBA operates at the most macro level, right? Kathy Engelbert is the commissioner of the WNBA, but she has a boss. It's Adam Silver. She is a department head. In addition, you know, in some ways it's true. And it's perhaps, you know, not the most pleasant thing to say, but that's how it works. And you know, WNBA offices are in the NBA offices, right? You know, during these negotiations, NBA lawyers are doing the labor negotiations on behalf of the WNBA alongside WNBA lawyers. Like, they are working in tandem. And so it seems to me that the one way forward is for the NBA and probably Adam Silver to take a bigger role in this, right? If the WNBPA and its leadership feel like they cannot trust Kathy Engelbert, well, someone's got to step in or you're headed for a calamity, basically.
Yeah. It is the juice, you know, is it worth the squeeze, right? Like, if I'm the NBA, like, is the discontent, the PR, I mean, crisis right now that is kind of hovering over the league as the finals approach later this week, that comes along with Kathy Engelbert being in her role, is that worth the squeeze? Like, is all that is going on worth it right now? Or if you're Adam Silver, like, if you're Adam Silver, should you try and make an abrupt change, pull the plug and veer a different direction? And who knows what that looks like? Who knows who that person would be? But, like, you know, maybe that doesn't even make a internal difference in terms of the talks, but maybe it just is a PR move that makes the league, the NBA entity, look better. Like, I don't really know the answer to the question, but I think these are all some of the questions that I know I've been asking people. People have been asking me. I'm sure the same for you in the hours immediately after Fee's comments.
Yeah. And I think that's the interesting thing. And we should acknowledge, obviously, the report, Sports Business Journal had a report today saying that Kathy Engelbert is expected to leave the position after the CBA negotiations end. And the reporting said that this was the presumption before today's comments. Obviously, today's comments maybe were an accelerant to that reporting coming out. And I don't think that's probably something that, you know, is surprising, right? For a lot of reasons, one of them being Kathy Engelbert's been in the job for a long time. She's been in the job for like 6 years. This is going to be her second CBA. That's a pretty long time.
Yep.
And we should note that a WNBA spokesperson completely denied it to SBJ. I ran this by a WNBA spokesperson as well. They also called it categorically false. So I'm curious to see what this is going forward. And because the WNBA, and this is the crucial thing, right? The WNBA is on the ascent. It's going up. And you have to find a way to create less friction. Like, you have to find a way to make everyone like each other 90% of the time, right? You can hate each other during CBA negotiations, but you got to like each other some of the time. And it doesn't seem like they ever like each other aside from that one video of Kathy Engelbert dancing with players at the All-Star break.
I like that you use the word ascent, because I think that was another thing that seemingly was very strategic, another strategic part of what Nafisa Collier said. Because one of the things that she relayed was a private conversation that she had with Kathy Engelbert last February at Unrivaled, the league that, fittingly enough,
Nafisa Collier is a rival,
but also that Nafisa Collier is the co-founder of, and Nafisa Collier's husband is the president of, right? So part of her remarks about running a league, she was very clear, stem from, my husband runs a league, so I know a lot or have thoughts on what it takes to run a league. And Collier referenced this conversation, and part of it, she said, that Collier asked Engelbert why high-profile young players such as Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Paige Beckers were such significant revenue drivers, but were paid so little by comparison. And Collier said that Engelbert responded, again, we don't know, you know, these are Collier's words, but quoting Engelbert, that Caitlin should be grateful she makes $16 million off the court, because without the platform the WNBA gives her, she wouldn't make anything. And when we think about the ascent, I think one of the things that was super strategic about what Fee said was, like, that pits Caitlin Clark and all of her fans and what Clark has meant for women's basketball up against Kathy Engelbert. And, you know, again, I'm not sitting in the NBA offices right now, but I'd be hard-pressed, I imagine, to find someone who says that when you think about the next 15 years of the league, who is a more important figure in the history of women's basketball in the WNBA? Is it going to be, you know, A, Kathy Engelbert, or B, Caitlin Clark? You know, we do a lot of anonymous polling at The Athletic. What do we think the poll results on that would be, Mike?
I think you could get everyone on the record with an answer, and it would be unanimous Caitlin Clark.
Right. And like, to be fair, you know, I don't know how many commissioners were ever more important than, you know, the biggest star in the league at a time. But certainly, you know, Kathy has, as we're said, helped steward this period of growth. But the rocket ship are these players, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there needs to be a framework for them to operate in. But like, if Caitlin Clark retired from the WNBA tomorrow and joined Unrivaled, that league would also be a rocket ship too, right?
Yeah. And I think the thing that's kind of curious about all this is the NBA during Adam Silver's tenure has been very close to the players unit, has been very close to the players. Like, he has brought them in. He has called them partners. He and LeBron James, he and the top players in the league, like, there's no beef, you know, no long-term beef. There are moments of beef. There are times when there's a hamburger in the middle. But, like, for the most part, everything is copacetic. And that's clearly not the case. And that's also kind of surprising, considering the NBA's, you know, role in the W, is that it has gotten to this point, right? Like, it has gotten to this point publicly in such a way that is just, I got to tell, like, Nafisa Collier, I don't know if she's a wrestling fan, but this is, and to be the most cliche guy on Twitter, like, this was an amazing kind of, like, just in an amazing mic work. Like, the way that she came out and made this whole thing was just the planning, the presentation, putting that in a, like, a very dense 4.5 minutes and getting out, like, kudos in terms of just understanding the theatrics and the drama of it.
I mean, she learned clearly from her coach, who on Friday night gave a tight two. That's as good of a 2-minute rant. Also railing against the league as you're going to find, you know, a hat trick of F-bombs was how John Bortigross, the Sports Center host, put it. But yeah, I mean, I think to Fee, and we should say this too, like, Nafisa Collier is one of the best players in the WNBA.
Mm-hmm.
And she has been for a number of years. She just finished number 2 in MVP voting. But I think what is going to be so striking as it relates to her legacy and how people now view her, like, today, what she said will not forever be linked to her legacy. And she is someone who is a co-founder of Unrivaled. Like, she's gotten a ton of pub over the last 6 months, the last 8 months, over the last year for this league. We saw her, you know, become a Jordan sponsor. We've seen her brand grow. But over the course of 4.5 minutes, you saw someone, I think, go from one of the best players in the league, but someone who the casual sports fan doesn't really know the name of or is not that interested in, to, like, arguably the voice of the league right now. You know, I know people say Nneka Ogumekwe, she's Madam President. Nneka is, you know, the head of the PA, that Caitlin Clark is maybe the face of the league. But, like, Fee right now might be the voice of the league. And that is pretty remarkable to, you know, ascend to that role by, you know, having a strong 4-minute statement, you know, so to speak.
And I want to get to one last thing. But there's one thing we haven't discussed that I do want to discuss with you. And there's also a playoff game on tonight that you probably should watch and I kind of want to watch. And so we'll get to that too. But the reason why this was another interesting part of the day for the league is, one, a head coach got fired. A good job by the Dallas Wings.
Slip that in.
Very smart PR move. Kudos to you guys. I don't know when you originally planned to announce it, but you seized the moment. The other move is, the WNBA announced an 11-year media rights deal with Versant, which is a spinoff of basically all of NBC Universal's cable channels. And so now the WNBA will be on the USA Network for the next 11 years. And doing a little bit of follow-up reporting on this, USA Network, all those games will not be streamed on Peacock, which is surprising, because the NBA's whole thing about its last media rights deal, this new one that's kicking in, including the W's portion of it, which they announced together, is that all the games would be accessible. Every single national game would be streamed. And yet this is a step back for the league. And so that's interesting, right? Especially since one of the comments that was attributed to Kathy Engelbert, again, we don't know what Kathy's side of this conversation is that the players should be thankful for the media rights deal that she negotiated, although I would argue was negotiated by the NBA. But this is a step back from kind of what happened there, right? Like, they're going from being on NBC and being streamed on Peacock for all the national games and the Wednesday night doubleheader to now not, and making it harder for fans to see the sport. Although they do get some extra money out of it. So that's the other part of the reporting, is that they do get some extra money out on top of the media rights deal. So those are two things that happened that probably would have been a bigger deal. And maybe the WNBA would have caught flack for it. Well, not the Dallas Wings thing. Like, that's their own that's their own business. But the media rights deal is interesting that it gets them more money, but kind of less visibility there. NBC flipped those channels because they said, hey, you guys are an anchor on our share price. We need to put you somewhere before you capsize us. And then the WNBA said, hey, here, have some of our finals, including starting in 2026. It's a good question for me, I think, as someone who was a media observer. Will USA Network be around in 11 years? And I know that sounds maybe a little, you know, dystopian, but have you seen what cable's been going through?
Yeah.
But here's my thing. The unspoken part of this is unrivaled, right? Nafisa Collier has this experience as a co-founder of Unrivaled. Her husband, as she said, is the president of Unrivaled, right? I dare say the WNBA can kind of wait out, the WNBA players, a lot of them, can wait out these negotiations in a way that they cannot before or have not been able to before because they have money coming to them from Unrivaled.
Yep.
And if I made a prior wrestling reference to the mic work that Nafisa Collier had, it's always good to have a rival company out there for you to go back to. Am I reading to too much or is this too conspiratorial? But it does seem the fact that there's another league that they can go to and that they're building, right? They all get equity stakes. And obviously Nafisa Collier is larger and her husband is present, but like they all the players who are in there get equity stakes. Like, this does seem to add another layer to it and also is potentially beneficial to Unrivaled, which is, I'm guessing, is a league the WNBA is probably not too pleased with.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll put it this way. If you ask any player, would you rather win a WNBA championship or an Unrivaled championship, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a player that says an Unrivaled championship, right? Like, if I can only win one of the two. Because, as we know—
Who won the championship last year? Can you say?
Yeah, Vinyl. Oh, Vinyl damn. Won. All right. Vinyl won.
I can't even fact check. I have no idea.
Yeah. See, it was a surprising. Yeah. Nafisa Collier's team, was supposed to win the championship, but
Then it was seen too rigged.
Yes, exactly. Mike, I'm totally wrong. Vinyl unbeaten Nafisa Collier's team. It was Rose Basketball Club, the Chelsea Gray team.
Yeah, like I said, I could not even.
There you go,
fact
Rose.
You
Vinyl beat the Lunar Owls, Fee's team, to make it to the finals. So players would rather win the WNBA championship. They'd rather play in the WNBA, right? In terms of like the legacy league, there's more fans, the travel, like there's, you know, the W is, it's the premier league right now in the sport. But certainly in the short term, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're going to see this upcoming winter, I guess the number will be 54 players who are going to be part of Unrivaled. Eight teams of six plus a developmental team or group of six players will all be part of Unrivaled. Like some of the, you know, a lot of those players would have played overseas, gotten paychecks elsewhere anyway, but they're all going to stay in the States. They're all going to make a bunch of money. They're going to be together. They're going to work on their games. And they have this fallback that is very convenient and is a player-led league. And that's not to say that there are things that Unrivaled, you know, does not need to improve on, because there's room for growth there too. I mean, they're very aware about injuries, for instance. This year, they're going to four nights a week. There are no back-to-backs because last year there were a lot of injuries throughout Unrivaled. Like, there are things that they recognize they need to clean up and improve the product even going forward. But like, yeah, it's an unbelievable, it's not a coincidence in timing either, but you know, what a benefit, what a luxury that these players have to turn to such a seemingly strong alternative, a stopgap that will keep them making money, keep them culturally relevant, depending on how these negotiations go.
Yeah, and I will say, look, we've been pretty cynical and skeptical about the WNBA on this podcast or in this show. I will say, if you are unhappy with the leadership in the basketball league that you play in, it's nice to have an alternative in which you are the leaders and in which you take all or most of the financial upside, which are your big critiques of the WNBA, right? And you get to do it in a time when everyone cares about what you're doing. And Nafisa Collier's star power is now growing, not only for her on-the-court play, but also what she does off of it.
No, I think that is very well said. That is, you know, a nice button. Unrivaled begins, I guess, early January 2026 for all those circling those dates on your calendar.
The rows try to go back to back.
There you go.
Exactly. I mean, there's maybe a larger discussion about what the next WNBA CBA could do to Unrivaled. But again, I think this friction between the two leagues probably is not going to go away. And they are, you know, I think the relationship there and how they go forward is going to be interesting to watch. But that's going to wrap it up. We've done probably a half hour. I've kept you from the first quarter and I've kept myself from the first quarter. This was the first emergency podcast in business decision history. I think it was worth it for probably one of the craziest days in WNBA history. Ben Pickman, thank you for coming on to the show. Follow Ben. He is, for my money, the best WNBA reporter going. Sabrina Merchant is number two, and I'm like somewhere around like 59th millionth.
We've talked about transparency here. I did not pay Mike to say that.
But he just did give me a few Bitcoins on the side. So yes, Ben, thank you for coming on. Good luck with this game. Good luck the next few weeks. I don't envy you. It's going to be wild times. Everyone, thank you for watching and listening. Subscribe to Business Decision. We will catch you on the next episode.